welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9. This is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. I'm Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Devil Hamza.
And today we're talking about the ever long and ever forgotten topic of women in management and how we have these glass ceilings that, you know, as our guests will tell you, 25 years we've been smashing against them and not making a lot of headway as a community. And so today we've got two great guests on two interviews for you. The first is from Patty White, who is an assistant professor of communication studies at Nebraska University. And she is the author of a research paper done, and it's called Lessons from the Top, 15 Women Who Have Made It Share Their Stories. And that was published in 1995. So she's on, and a little bit, she's up first. And then we have Randy White, who is the co-author of a book called Glass Ceilings. And he's on a little bit later after the break. So, Deb, this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart as well as mine.
Definitely it is. Definitely.
Yeah, glass ceilings. And I mean, people say, oh, sexism is dead. We've overcome it. And yet there's, I can't remember the statistics, but less than 6% of corporate executives are women.
Yeah, that's really low.
and that's up from 25 years ago when it was 4%.
Yeah, definitely. Not much change.
Not a lot of movement there. So we've brought on the experts to talk about this topic and give us a heads up on, you know, maybe why we're not making the headway that we think we should and maybe what we can do about it. And so I'm going to bring up Patty Hawk for you first, and then we'll talk about what she has to say.
I'm a professor of communication studies at Nebraska Wesleyan University.
Back in, when was that? That was 1995 you wrote that first paper.
Right. Yeah, it was a research project that was particularly interesting to me because of where I'm located in Lincoln, Nebraska. It was not difficult to identify the women who were at the top of their fields because there weren't a whole lot of them. And when I interviewed those women, it was just a particularly good experience for me with research. The point behind the research was to get sort of a qualitative understanding of how women were experiencing leadership at the top of organizations, and particularly at that time, these women would have been primarily, they were fairly close to the same age, so most of them were in their 40s and 50s. And their experiences were, as I came to realize, quite similar. They'd all started out as either thinking they were going to or actually did pursue degrees in nursing or teaching, because that's all that was basically available to them when they started.
Interesting. So this is almost 10 years later now. How have things changed?
I think things have changed in that there are more women who are in positions of middle and upper management, but in upper management, it has not been a significant increase. So it's not as though we can look at those figures and say to ourselves, well, you know, women haven't been in the workplace in serious numbers for a lot of years, so it's natural that they wouldn't be at the top. They have, in fact, been in the workplace in significant numbers since the 70s. And it's not, this is something that should already have manifested itself. There are still, still huge issues with women being seen as tokens on boards, particularly boards of director. And so although women are, I think, doing a better job of supporting one another, recognizing how powerful that is, there's still so much that shows that they are marginalized when it comes to serious decision making and when it comes to board level participation.
And why is that?
Top positions and board positions don't just naturally become diverse. They become diverse because somebody went to the effort to say, you know, this is not healthy for us.
Exactly. So as a woman who's aspiring to get to upper management, I mean, the thing that always comes up is this, you're too aggressive, you're too much a B word that rhymes with itch. And and women always, if they are strong, competitive women, I mean, I get this all the time myself, and all of a sudden, you don't play well with others. You don't get along. It's always a negative. Mm-hmm. But when men exhibit the exact same behavior, they get rewarded for it.
Right. Right. And part of the reason why that's true is because much of the research that's been done on management and top management has been done on men. And the reason it's been done on men is because that's who was managing. So then we started to equate masculine behavior with leadership behavior. Then we started telling women, like in the 80s, if you dress like this, if you talk like this, if you act like this, men will be more comfortable with you. What they were saying is if you either behave sort of in a hyper-feminine way or a hyper-masculine way, then you'll be accepted. What we didn't look at all was, if you do what you do well, then you will be happy. People around you will be happy, and everybody will be more successful. But that's not the way we looked at it. We looked at these characteristics that had already been defined and said, act like that. Then when women did that, when women acted like men, it did not meet expectations at the time, a male-dominated workforce. And so everybody was uncomfortable. The reality is the problem we have is that we have a tendency to say, act like these seven things that have demonstrated that this is successful. We've not said, what makes you successful? What gifts do you bring in whatever way that manifests itself? Whether you're the kind of person who can boldly, sort of lead and speak up in meetings and you're comfortable in that role. And so people were not able, especially women, to be, they was natural for them, whatever was natural, whether it was bold or whether it was introspect. And, so that, it kind of paralyzed women when they first really started going into upper management kinds of positions because they were putting on a facade, whatever that facade was. Do I need to be sweet in this environment? Am I supposed to be bold in this environment? Who do you need me to be so I can be successful? And so women expended a lot of energy doing that. I hope we're seeing less of that now, but we're still very much seeing that women who speak boldly are seen as too aggressive. One of the things I equate it with often is many women I know, when they get very angry about a situation, their reaction, whether it's an interpersonal reaction or whether it's in an organization or whatever, is to cry. It's not to bawl. It's, I am so angry right now that I am crying. And we have equated that with weakness, but it comes from the exact same emotion as yelling. So if a man yells, he's passionate about his work. If a woman cries with the same passion behind it, she's weak. And this is problematic in an organization. We have all of these systems that were set in place based on much research that was conducted after men came back from World War II, ran organizations. We looked at their management style. We said that's what it's supposed to look like. Everybody should do that. And if you had any, men were okay as long as they followed that model. Women were in a double bind. If they followed that model, they were seen as bitchy. If they did not follow that model, they were seen as weak.
And that's the conundrum.
That's the conundrum.
And how do we overcome the conundrum?
Well, part of the way we do it is that women nurture other women, and that was one of the things that came out in my research. And when I say nurture, I mean literally, I know what you have gone through. I went through it. And so help me, I want to help you understand how this path has a tendency to play out. And these are the ways that you can be courageous in that journey. So women, they're empathetic to the situation and to support one another. Not to the exclusion of being in relationship with men, but rather because this is a unique perspective, it's a life journey that they share, and so they should share it with one another. So women need to support women. But then we need to not be afraid to raise the issues when they arise. If there's an imbalance on the board, raise the issue there's an imbalance on the board. If it feels like women are treated differently or, as has a tendency to happen, treated as a group, as though that, you know, I remember specifically being in a staff meeting one time, 30 people in a staff. Each of the men was asked their opinion by name, and then the president turned and said, "And what do the women think?"
Oh, no.
Yes. And so, you know, it's things like that. He wasn't being malicious. He was unaware, and it needed to be brought to his attention. So, you know, to invite people into a better arena of cooperation, sensitivity. So I'm not sure that this comes out of malice. I think it comes out of lack of understanding.
One of the things that I ran across in my research for the show was that sometimes women in management find it helpful to hold meetings specifically talking about team dynamics. And the reason that they say that is that gives women the forum to talk about these things without being bitchy or being irrational or emotional, because that's the title of the meeting.
So these meetings that they're holding are meetings where they're talking about how they deal with how the team deals with one another?
Yes.
Okay. To me, that just makes really good sense. And it's meta communication. It's talking about how we talk to each other and doing it in a way that says better organizations, stronger organizations understand one another and are sensitive to one another. It is one of my frustrations that organizational members will take, for example, personality tests and say, okay, these are the characteristics that are me. You need to address me like that. So you need to understand me so that you can talk to me. That's great. Except we have a tendency not to move beyond that and say, and I need to understand you so that we can come together in some sort of an understanding. It's not just a matter of saying, this is who I am, so get used to me. But rather, this is who I am, this is who you are, this is how we're going to function together. And to be able to address it in that sort of a respectful way. Talking about how we process things, how we are together in an organization, makes a healthy organization. Unless, of course, we're doing it 4 hours a day every day.
And then it's unproductive.
It's problematic. Yeah.
So what other advice could you give women that are trying to get ahead?
Be sensitive to the situation that you're in. Make yourself aware of how the organization works, what role you're going to play in the organization. And once you move forward with integrity, move forward well-informed, if you are in an environment that is unhealthy or malicious, that is not the way the world works. If you stay in that environment and just think, well, I guess this is the kind of crap I'm going to have to put up with, then we make real situations that need not be real, and either change the situation, either take steps to try to change the situation in a way that invites people into the change, that doesn't attack them for being ignorant, but rather invites the change. Or if that change is never going to happen, don't live your life in that organization. So it's not part of the ways I think we damage ourselves is that we just assume this part of my life is going to be crap. And that assumption means we don't get the energy up or the creativity up to make it better, or we don't get the energy up to leave it. And that, I think, is essential. The story shouldn't be, this is the kind of stuff women have to deal with. The story is, these things exist. How are we going to make them better? What role am I going to play in making this a better environment to be a part of? And if I can't, how am I going to live my life in a way that doesn't include this organization?
Good advice. One of the lines that struck me in your research was the line that one of your participants say, that younger women are not aware of glass ceilings.
Right. Right. And this was the this was one of the women also who was talking about the fact that she felt guilty that she hadn't played a role in illuminating that issue. And they don't. And part of the reason they don't is because when women start jobs with their graduating classmates, men and women are typically paid about the same amount of money. And then they don't see that that changes over time, that statistically speaking, his salary goes up at a fairly significantly faster rate than hers does. But women aren't likely to turn to their male colleagues and go, hey, what are you making? And start to figure that out. They figure it out by accident. And then they start to think, well, I don't know, maybe I haven't done as much. Or women have a tendency to move up in organizations. They think by accident. It's not by accident. It's by hard work. But because they didn't start out their careers by saying, one day I shall be president of this organization, and many men do, women assume they stumbled up to the top, when that's not what they did at all. They worked very hard. They earned their success. So it's another place where women who have gone before need to educate the women behind them and say, you know, be careful when you hit this level. Be careful how you negotiate. Know that men are often negotiating differently than you are, and that you need to take the steps it's going to take to not be left behind in this. And I would never want to suggest that it is only the women's responsibility to make these sort of societal changes. I only suggest that they do have a role to play to educate the people around them and also to change the organizations, the systems they're a part of. So hopefully others get on board, but for now they are not powerless. They simply have to go, yes, this is not fair, and I'm going to do what I can to change it.
And while I was looking for guests for this show, I must have ran across, I don't know, 15 or 20 women running around the country doing workshops on this very topic and teaching women how to fix this problem of the glass ceilings and the aggressive perception of aggressiveness and how that's a negative for women. And you know, every single one of them is pretty much basing it on, and there's an article in Fortune magazine by one of their columnists, Annie Fisher, and she writes, you know, next time you watch your male coworker say no, pay attention closely and then do what he does. And they're all giving the same advice: watch men and do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, I do a lot of work in the trans community, and trans women who have spent their, you know, good portion of their lives socialized male, and then they go into the workforce as a woman and start doing everything exactly the same way they've been doing their whole life, run into huge roadblocks and huge problems doing it the way men do. So I can't see that as our answer.
No, and it is also one more way of saying you're not right. You're not meant to be in positions of leadership naturally, so we're going to ask you to behave this way. Behave like this. Everybody behave like this, because we've already found a book that says that these 7 steps are going to make you a manager. And we ignore the fact that those 7 steps were built on research that focused on a very homogeneous group of people. It would likely have been about the same aged white men. And then we say, so that, yeah, that seemed to work. Well, it worked great for a very homogeneous group of white men. And as a result, you know, we think that if everybody just does that thing, then they'll be successful rather than having people come from the place that's of comfort to them. So there was a study that was done one time about they trained a camera on a boardroom, and then they counted the number of movements that men did to get settled at the board table and the number of movements that women did. And what they discovered was that women did about twice as many movements. So men did an average of 7 movements to get settled, and women 14. When you look at that, what you realize is that the things that women are doing to get settled are partly an artifice of what's expected of them in the workplace. So if they're expected, for example, a lot in the Midwest, if you work for example, banks and that sort of thing, you're expected to wear pantyhose and a suit and, you know, all of those sorts of things. And if you don't do those things, certain decisions are made about you. If you don't act like men, they won't accept you. But if you do act like men, they won't accept you. We just don't want you here. So there's an excuse for all of it. When if we just came at it from the perspective of sort of embracing the multifaceted nature of diverse peoples in the workplace, all of us would be happier.
I know I run into all kinds of problems. I went to a job interview, and then they told me, oh, you need to be less aggressive. And then I went to the next one, and they said, you're not being yourself. We need somebody more aggressive.
This is exactly it. And that conversation doesn't happen with men. That conversation happens with women because the workplace is still a little uncomfortable with women showing up.
And thanks, Patty, for those comments. And I mean, she touched on a lot of stuff that that is in there. And her study has 5 major themes in it. The first one being the majority of the women she talked to characterized their management style as participative. They described their work as one of encouraged consensus building and collaboration, and they also noted that in their experience, women managers were more likely than men to give credit where credit is due.
Well, yeah, I guess I would agree to that to a point, but then I also seen women managers that are very hard on other women in the organization. I don't know if it's due to jealousy or they feel threatened that they're going to move up and take their jobs, but I've seen in a lot of organizations where women don't help women.
No, and that happens quite a bit, and I'm not sure exactly why that is, but I mean, one of the major themes that comes out in this is that women need, whatever word you want to use for it, Patty uses mentor, Randall uses sponsor, and one of the major themes that came out is that for women to get ahead, that they can use the assistance of women who have gotten to the top. But A, there's not a lot of women at the top, so that's very difficult to come by. And then, like you said, sometimes when the women do get to the top, they're not there to help other women get to the top.
Yeah, they'd rather have young men underneath them.
Yeah, and you know, that seems to be the issue. And another thing that I've noticed in all of my work, I train a lot of human resources departments. And human resources departments, primarily I'm dealing with women in those departments. There are men in human resources, but primarily I would say that there are more women than there are men in those departments. And I find it fascinating that the people that are typically doing the interviews, setting up the interviews, typically making the decisions on who is going to get a chance at these positions, typically are women. So I find a disconnect there because I feel like we are in the position to promote ourselves.
Yeah, and I think maybe one of the reasons for that, Michelle, is because women are in middle management positions.
Yes.
And that's when the decisions are made for hiring and stuff like that at these positions.
They are, but women in upper management aren't there.
Right.
So maybe we just don't have, and I guess upper management positions, those decisions are not made by human resources departments. Those decisions are made by other higher up executives who
like a board of directors or something like that.
Like a board of directors who, like our last guest just said, there's a huge problem getting women on boards of directors. Most of them are not or have very few women on them, which is one of those reasons that we have these problems.
Mm-hmm. I know in London, I know a lot of people on board of directors here, and there is a lot of women on board of directors, so things are changing that way. But I think that we still need to, women still need to mentor other women, and we need more women as managers out there to, make things equal playing field.
Yeah, and if you're at the top, and you're one of those fortunate women who are an executive, you know, please help someone else along the way get up.
Well put, Michelle.
Yeah. You know, just a call out there to all of our sisters that may be in those positions. You know, one of the other themes that came up is the challenges of balancing career and family. And, I mean, I think that one comes up as a steady theme when we're talking about women in business.
Oh, it's definitely, it is, especially if you're a single woman balancing a career with children at home and you have to worry about everything like the child care and spending time with your kids, and you're trying to get ahead in a job and you're working 14, 15 hours to try to get ahead in that job so you can move up. It's very stressful on you and the whole home situation.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I don't know about you, but you know, sick calls come from the school and you've got to rush off for those, and it tends to be more often than not the woman that is taking on those roles. So and there's one quote here in her study, and it's it says men, and this is one of the participants in her study, and it's men don't do the laundry, take the children to the doctor's office, make their dental appointments, write out lunch checks. They don't do the little things. My husband helps clean the house, do laundry, and does the dishes at night. He does a lot. But men think they can do one thing at a time. And I guarantee it that they can do one thing at a time. Whereas in what she's saying is that women are always multitasking.
Multitasking, definitely. Yeah.
Right? I mean, just on my way to the radio station, you know, I had to get the kids to school, and then I had to deal with their lunches, and then I had to deal with, you know, the phone company because I had problems with my cell service, and Kim, unfortunately, couldn't be here and produce the show today, so I had to arrange and figure out that. And this is all happening simultaneously on my way to the radio station.
So that's a really good example there, Michelle, that you're a really good decision maker when you have to. You think quick on your feet when you have to make decisions and make changes. And that's what a lot of women are like.
Exactly. And it doesn't seem to be noticed, is one thing that I've noticed a lot.
Well, there's some really good men out there that do help with the housework, and, you know, they're there for you. They'll help with the kids. So that has changed a lot, I think, from the 1960s, because that wouldn't have happened back then.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to get down on men because, you know, I know a lot of great ones, and, you know, and my ex-husband was awesome about helping out and doing everything, but I mean, even in that relationship where I had a husband who would do things and help out at the house and everything else, I still had to be the traffic cop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still had to be the director and the manager, and the bathroom needs doing. Can you go do that?
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what I found in my last heterosexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be back. We're talking about women in management. Really short commercial break. And we'll be back with more on Between the Margins.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters. We can do
welcome back to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Devil Hamza.
And we're talking about women in management. And the next guest that we have is a gentleman who typically, you know, I would say he travels the world as we speak. If he did make it to listen to the show, he's sitting in an airport on his way to China. So Randall White, PhD, he is co-author of a book called Breaking the Glass Ceilings, Can Women Reach the Top of America's Largest Corporations? And this is Randall.
Randall White, and I am a principal at a group called the Executive Development Group. I'm an affiliate professor at HEC out of Paris, and I'm the co-head of leadership in the EMBA worldwide, and I am a faculty member and do corporate education.
One of the main topics that I want to talk about is that when women are in management, they are either walked all over or they get called a bitch.
That's right. The aggressive young man versus the arrogant bitch syndrome. Right.
Exactly.
It's very difficult, isn't it?
It is.
Actually, when we originally wrote about that, we called it the narrow band of acceptable behavior, that everybody has a narrow band of acceptable behavior. But women, even more than men, have a very narrow band of acceptable behavior. He can do this, but she can't. I would argue that we could use exactly the same behavior, and yours will be labeled negative and mine positive. So I think then some women, I don't want to argue cause and effect, but I think some women with this notion of, oh, I'm going to be nurturing and this and that and the other, then the question becomes, is she tough enough to do the job? And then when women act as a male might in carrying out the job, they get a negative, it actually does come from a theory called labeling theory, and they get negative attribution.
So tell me about this labeling theory.
If you're coming off as strong or strident or whatever, you have to understand that people are going to take whatever it is they see and probably multiply that to some extent. And in labeling theory, what happens is when we see someone acting in a certain way, we label that behavior. We make an attribution, if you were, and that's where you get into this good, bad, positive, negative, all that sort of stuff.
So what do women do?
See themselves. Understand that it happens. Understand that in order, in many occasions, to get a job done, this is what I don't deny. In order to get a job done, it would take anyone, male or female, they'd have to potentially be tough or be demanding or whatever those attributes are. And what women need to understand is when they're tough and demanding, it's going to be multiplied by 10 or 100 or 1,000. And so they need to figure out not how they counter it, but the fact that that's likely to happen, and they need to make sure that they're available and accessible and that they're, if you will, values-driven in what they do. But I think the biggest issue is you have to be yourself. That's this whole issue that's become very popular the last few years called authenticity. Trying to be something you're not does not help you.
The problem comes in when not only are you labeled that way, but all of a sudden your bosses are attributing that you can't get along, you're not a team player, you can't play in the sandbox.
Yeah. Then you have another problem, and you're right about that. And it's fair for you to say, well, then when your bosses say that, then I think you have to sit down with bosses and say, well, excuse me, what behavior are you looking for here? If I need to do some things that are difficult, you're absolutely right. I'm not getting support from people, and I have to do some difficult things. So the least you can do is be supportive. By the way, I noticed that when bosses are supportive and give reasonable coaching and help, The N of one can help to overcome some of these issues of isolation and the way her behavior is labeled.
And that's the mentoring aspect of the solution to this?
Well, I think mentoring, and please, I'm not trying to pick an issue with you. I think mentoring is almost trite and sometimes overused. It's really developing a sort of learning partnership with a boss or a peer where you can really talk about what works and what doesn't. If you want to label it as mentoring, men also have mentors. We have less documentation of that in the development literature other than they're there. It's a book called Seasons of a Man's Life, really, really documents years ago the importance of mentors for men. And I don't want to get hung up, I got to have a mentor in order to get this feedback. No, you have to have a person that you trust that can give you straight feedback. You know, the higher you go, the less feedback you get. And if you're different from the predominant culture, you get even less feedback. So if people perceive, oh, this is the golden woman, they're not going to give her any feedback. So you've got to have a channel from somewhere, someone who can give you some trusted feedback. If you or others choose to use the word mentor, great. But I think it's almost like using the word friend. Many of us are lucky if we ever have a really good friend in our entire life. Many of us are lucky if we ever have a mentor. So if you're only waiting for a mentor to get decent feedback, you could be waiting a long time.
That's
my point. I think you've got to have somebody you really trust. I said this is true for men, too, who can give you some feedback. Because people who work for you can't come in your office. They're afraid. If they tell you you're a schmuck, you'll fire them. If your peers, you're competing for the next level up. And too often our bosses give us feedback about what we've done, our numbers, our production, our whatever, sales. They give us very little feedback about how we've done it because they don't know. And the kind of feedback you're talking about is feedback about how you did something, how you went about doing it, how you hurt people or supported people or shit on people or listened to people. And I think for excluded classes, women among them, I think they get less of that feedback because, again, oftentimes in an organization at a particular level, they're an N of one. So where do they get it? I've got umpteen cases that I could bore you with that are all N's of one. No feedback, no channel for feedback, or she didn't listen because she didn't know who to trust. That's the other issue. Who do you trust? I think a lot of women feel like, oh, this is all settled. This is passé. There's no glass ceiling. And I keep going, then how come... I teach at Duke Corporate Education, and I teach at Achete out of Paris, and I travel the world teaching. What I find is, as I work with very senior-level groups, I still see, if I'm lucky, I see one woman. I've got a group that I worked with 3 weeks ago. It's 12 men. I got another group I worked with yesterday. It's 16 men. There are no women in the room. Zero, zip, nada. This is 2011. So... give me a break.
Or give us a break.
But yeah, right. So there's no solution to this. None.
How depressing.
Well, no. Maybe what I should say is there's no resolution to this. I misspeak. There is a solution because what I just said is depressing. I do see some women who are making it. I do see some organizations that get it. I do see some people. I do see people who are open to giving and receiving behaviorally based feedback. Really good feedback has three pieces. It has a context or a situation or a time and a place. Yesterday in our staff meeting, and it focuses on the person's behavior, not the person. When you interrupted constantly, when you didn't listen, or... When you stopped interrupting and you did listen. And then the third piece is it has an impact. It made me feel like you were listening to me, or it made me feel like you didn't value my point of view. You know, it doesn't label the person. It really focuses on their behavior. And for many women who are like from some other planet in some of these situations, that's what they're desperate for. how is my behavior perceived? Tell me. And then let me think about how I could either modify my behavior or get some help. By the way, I still think women are denied key developmental positions where they get to cut their teeth. Fixing things, starting things, those are the things where leadership really gets. That's the crucible of modern leadership. And I think the women that you and I are most impressed with when we run into them or listen to them are women who have had the opportunity to build something or fix something or really lead something significant. And I think organizations are still very paternalistic about giving women the opportunity on the job. 70% of where we learn is on that job. But, I mean, we originally did glass ceiling in 1987. It'll be 25 years coming up this spring. We're slightly better in percentages of representation, but not much.
25 years and not much improvement?
No.
So how do we change that?
Well, I'm hoping that you're going to do a show. I'm hoping that there are still people who are willing to write papers. I'm hoping that what people start getting toward is, right now, in order to be competitive in a world marketplace, it doesn't matter what gender you are. It matters how smart you are, and it matters how you learn. Are you learning agile? Are you able to deal with a variety of things that you haven't asked about? And on those agendas, women and men don't score statistically differently. And I even think we sometimes err on the other side. Well, women are blah. They're this. They're more people oriented. I'm sorry. I don't see it, and the data don't say it. There's been a running thing about whether women are or are not better at strategic planning. That started in the Harvard Business Review. When you look at large data sets, women are seen as just as skilled at strategy as men are. Those are side trips. They don't really take us anywhere. What we need are people who are learners, and on that, who are learning agile. And men and women don't seem to be statistically significantly different at that. And if we would just focus more on that, who would be the better learner in this situation, or who's the best learner in that situation? Who's open to learning in this situation? If we could get there, that's how we solve it. And the organizations that get there first are going to solve it, and that's where we want, where women are going to want to work.
Quite frankly, of all of the research that I've done and all of the people that I've talked to, I have yet to have somebody actually answer the question, and that is, how does a woman get a job?
How does she get a job?
How does she get a management position when she's applying for these jobs, and one time she walks into the interview and they say, oh, you just don't get along with others, and the next time she goes into the interview and they say, oh, you're too passive, and she's being the same person.
And I think that's where we've gotten this thing mixed up about having a mentor. Let's use the word sponsor. I think that the women that I see that make it into a senior leadership role have somebody who believes in them. And I don't want to go so far as to say it's a mentor. It's a sponsor. It's somebody who's willing to take the risk. In some cases, I've seen it that the CEO who has a kid, a daughter in college or law school or something, gets it, understands it, and says, this person's just as talented as anybody else. I think the women who make it make the most of the hand they're dealt, and they do jockey and fight for those positions where they can learn the most, and they present an impressive resume, and they have somebody who believes in what they can do. Interesting you're doing this on Monday, since Carol Bartz was just ousted at Yahoo. I wonder why. You know, some of the women who get ousted are seen as, you know, the arrogant, aggressive bitch. But, I see the women who make it and who get the opportunity. Somebody believes in them. I'm going to call it a sponsor. And I also believe that women make the most of the opportunities. And I think that there are five critical leadership opportunities. and they happen in different contexts. Fixing something, starting something, scale and scope. Those things happen in different contexts, offshore, onshore, in a business that's growing, in a business that's contracting, and, you know, all kinds of things. But those different experiences teach the lessons of leadership, and women and men who are able to learn those lessons and use them and be versatile are the ones who make it. Now, the problem is that's split unevenly because we have fewer women in the pool that get that opportunity, because there are fewer women with sponsors who believe they can go do that, I think. And we're still very paternalistic. Oh, she has a family. Oh, she has a... But the fascinating thing, and we never documented it very well, it was almost anecdotal, is that the women in the original Glass Ceiling and the women that I meet in the world tend to have a supportive primary family. Their spouse, if they have one, by the way, many have given up having families, but you already know that. But if they have a spouse, that spouse has a lesser career. It's not a dual high-powered career. Right now, that's a myth. There are fewer of those. You might find some in Toronto or some in New York or Washington, or, and I think those are second and later marriages and whatever. But I think the what I tend to find is there's one primary career and the other person becomes a house husband. And I can think of somebody, two people that I coach that are that way right now. One that runs an NGO with a large global footprint. He's a lovely guy. He's a great guy. He's a consultant in his own right. But he has a much lesser career than she does. And I've got oodles of examples of that.
So the thing that came forward in while I was researching for this show is that there are all of these women running all over the place, and they're all being paid to talk to women's group, and their advice tends to be you need to act like men.
Sorry. You need to be a learner, and you need to look at the experiences on the job that are provided and make the most of them. You need to act like yourself. Now, there are some things that psychological studies tell us. Women are more reluctant to ask for a raise. Women are more this or that or the other. More humble, more... In that particular case, I have to tell you, I think the jury's out. It's like... This shampoo cures dandruff in this person, but not this person. I think it may be more situational than some of the studies lead us to believe. I don't have enough data, but I do know that I see some women who are incredibly feminine and incredibly successful. And I see some women who are incredibly masculine and incredibly successful. And if I take that same two by two, then there are cells of the more masculine acting being unsuccessful and the more feminine being unsuccessful. So I think acting like X is not really helping us talk about what the situation is inside organizations. The situation inside organizations is people learn from the jobs they're given. And if we have small pools of women and big pools of men being considered for those critical development jobs, well, then what is the bias? The bias is going to be much more towards, well, we have five guys who could do this. We have one woman who could do this. Well, come on. So the guys stand a greater chance of being chosen. Yet at the entry level, we have a variety of factors that early on don't play out in women's careers, but later do, like the childbearing and child rearing. And the latest analog is not that it's a glass ceiling, but that it's a labyrinth. And I would have argued years ago it's a trek. And there are on ramps and off ramps and choices. And but damn, when we throw away talent, that's what I see. When I think of your show, I think of your show as it's a real question of why are we throwing away talent? These are talented people. How can we help get the best talent, however it's packaged? into the key leadership positions in the organization so we create the best organization possible. And I don't care what that talent looks like.
And talent, that's what women have.
Yeah, we do.
You know, one of the things that came up, and it came up in Patty's research as well, is this thing about having a supportive family and having a supportive husband or a supporting wife behind the woman that's being successful. And, I mean, it always brings up to for me that saying, you know, behind every great man is a great woman.
You know what? I think that that's really outdated, I think. There's a lot of spouses that are not supportive of their wife being in upper management. And I think that obviously we have the stats to prove that. So I think that much hasn't changed over the years.
Yeah, but you know, if behind every great woman there was a great man, I think that might make it a little easier for her to get up there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, having the support of a man that, you know, that's in 100% agreement with what you're doing and doesn't mind you working the long hours and that, I think that's great to have. It would make things a lot easier. But for myself, I would still go after my dreams and I would still do what I need to do, you know, despite what my spouse would say about that.
And I believe you on that. knowing you for as long as I have, I'll say that's a definite accurate statement.
I mean, I'm in my 50s now, and if I can teach anybody or show mentor anybody, you know, that you have to go after your dreams, and you know what? It doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. Whatever job you want to get, you have a right to go after that job and be yourself and learn what you need to do to get that job.
Yeah, which brings the fifth point in Patty's research, and that is that that the people she talked to suggested that women need to develop a strong sense of self-awareness and confidence, and they encourage women to cultivate a strong network and establish long-range goals.
And I agree with that. And I have a lot of women that I know in London here that that I would call friends that are in high places here. And that's what you have to do. You have to form friendships with people that are in high management, and you know, so that you can pass this on to other women.
Yeah, and we have a caller on the line. CHRW. Hello. CHRW. Oh, they're gone. Oh, that's too bad. Caller, if you want to call back, we'll try and get you on the air. So, difficult to pick up callers when you're doing production and doing the air time here. So we're talking about, I mean, self-confidence and self-awareness. I think that's a key. I mean... I know when I walk into a boardroom and I'm staring down a room full of, you know, 50-year-old men who are looking at me and saying, okay, what are you doing here? Okay. And this happens a lot to me. You know, you have to be confident and you have to be self-assured and you have to know that you are the best person to be standing there.
Yeah, and you know what? I've been on a couple of boards in London, and I've had one experience where the president of the board just walked out and got upset with us and just walked out. I mean, so I think that I know what I have to say is valuable, and I get it. You know, I come across in a professional way when I'm talking to people on these boards, and so I think that's the key. There is that you don't give up and you stay professional, and you don't get upset. That's the whole thing to getting ahead, I think.
Absolutely, and you know, you've got to put your best foot forward. I mean, one thing that a lot of my friends do is they give away the credit. And it's something that I watch women do on a regular basis is, you know, and I know it's part of the fact that that we can't get our opinions out there. So if we want to change something, we have to make it sound like it's somebody else's idea. In so many cases, when we're dealing with sexist men that are in power positions, you know, we have to do this kind of thing just to get our ideas out there. But all too often, women are giving the credit away, that they did the work and they are promoting someone else.
Well, and I think that's where you go back to where men take the credit from them. And that's been a pattern for all these years. But I disagree that women won't take credit for what they're doing nowadays, because I think that they do, and I see that a lot in women in upper management.
Well, I guess I don't deal with a lot of women in upper management since I don't know a lot.
Okay. Well, that would...
Since, you know, it's hard to get there when you're a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, unfortunately, I spent months and months preparing for this show and looking for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I couldn't find a single expert in the world that has a solution to this problem.
I think you just have to be yourself and never give up on your dreams and just keep pushing forward no matter what happens and stand up for yourself.
Absolutely. And the one thing that did come out resounding is don't try to be a man.
That's right. I mean, we don't have to do that.
Yeah. So, and I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that was consensus around the experts in this is that, you know, don't look over to your male co-parts and figure out what they're doing to figure out what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out for yourself and do it your way and rise to the top on your own merits.
Yeah, and we have laws here in Canada, too, to protect women against sexist behavior and harassment and bullying and stuff like that in the workplaces. And so, you know, this all ties into this, that if you're in a place like that, there is laws to protect women, but if you're in a management, you do happen to be getting into a middle management position, you don't have to put up with that. You know, if that's the way that the senior management is going to be, you don't have to stay at that organization. There's other places to go.
Absolutely. And you know, one of our experts there said that, you know, you need to look at your situation. And if you're in that situation and you're putting in those hours and you're putting in that time in an organization that is not going to promote you and is not going to attribute those to you, then you need to look elsewhere, and you need to move into an organization that is more accepting and that, you know, values what you have to bring to the table.
That's right. I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's what you need to do.
So this has been Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Devil Hamza.
A big thank you to our two guests, Patty Hawk, who took time out of her teaching schedule, and Randall White, who you know, took time off jet-setting around the world. Really appreciate your expertise in coming on the show today. Up next, we have AJ with All That Jazz. And if you want to hear more about this show and other shows, then check out our blogs at www.betweenthemargins.ca. Have yourself a healthy day.